It's the evening of July 31st, 2006, and this is A Gardener's Notebook. If you enjoy A Gardener's Notebook, please consider a vote on Podcast Alley at PodcastAlley.com, a review in the iTunes podcast directory, or a tip in our online tip jar. You'll find a link to all of these on the website. Welchrite.com/AGN. That's WELCHWRITE.com/AGN. So. Well, did you miss me? Yes, it's been a long time since our last installment of A Gardener's Notebook, and it's been quite a time for us. We've been suffering with triple-digit heat here in the San Fernando Valley, and it's prevented me from doing nearly anything in the garden over the last couple weeks, except stare at it through the window and attempt to stay cool. Along with that comes my usual summer allergy slash cold, which leaves me with a bit of a sniffle, which you can probably hear in my voice tonight. It's just dusk here now in Van Nuys, California, where we live. I'm looking out into the garden as darkness starts to fall. We've got all the windows thrown open to the garden all around us. Thank goodness. It's been a tough week or so. It feels great to have the 70-degree breeze blowing through the windows instead of the 78-degree air conditioning blowing on us, almost in vain at that point. The temperature's topped out around 106 or 107, according to my temperature gauge, my nice fancy thermometer that I keep here on my desk. It also reported 0% humidity, which I think is impossible, but it was certainly dry, and all the plants in the garden show it. If you're keeping up with the Gardener's Notebook blog on the website, you'll notice I posted a picture on Flickr and also to the blog showing my poor Japanese maple here in the back garden. It always gets a little bit of sunburn and heat stroke this time of year, but this year it's worse than I've ever seen. Pretty much all but the most interior leaves on the plants have curled up almost entirely, turned brown. We'll probably have an early leaf drop this year. I've thought in the past of perhaps throwing some sort of shade cover over it. It's not too large. I could probably cover it with something, but I tried that once with some tree ferns in the front garden and found that for whatever reason they didn't really take to it very well. I think the shade cloth might have actually trapped even more heat closer to the leaves and actually made the damage worse. So I simply live and let live. I know it'll survive. It's a well-established tree, but it doesn't look the greatest. Even the poor wisteria is suffering a little bit. I noticed some brown edges on some of the leaves of it, and it's usually not affected at all. So I guess that's some indication of just how hot it did get here. Of course, only about 5 to 10 miles away, the temperatures rose well into the triple digits, including up to, I believe, a record high of 116 in Woodland Hills, California. Now, once you get over 100 degrees, of course, it's pretty much the same, whether it's 101 or 116, but it certainly was not that comfortable. The weather forecast shows things warming up a little bit more towards this weekend, but nothing like the heat we had, so maybe we'll get something done in the garden this week. One can always hope. Over the last couple of weeks, I've reviewed two books by Anthony Eglund, a UK native who now lives here, a couple hundred miles north up in the Sonoma Valley, the famous wine-growing valley up north. And he's written two great books, including The Blue Rose and The Lost Gardens. As I do on occasion, I sent the review of The Lost Gardens up to the Amazon site. I like to do that on occasion, let people hear what I say about the various books I read, and I certainly read a lot of them. Well, it so happens, like all good authors, Mr. Eglund is watching his Amazon reviews and came across my review. In his letter, he wrote, "A tad late, but I thought I'd already sent you a note of thanks for your glowing review of my second novel. It appears I didn't, so here's another huge thank for all the Amazon stars. My editor at St. Martin's is most impressed." Now, most importantly, Mr. Eglund notes here, "I have a third story coming out in April 2007, The Water Lily Cross." And he offers to send me a review copy of that book. So, soon as I get a hold of that in 2007, I'll be sure to do yet another review of Mr. Eglin's books here on A Gardener's Notebook, and hope you're all enjoying those. If you have comments about the book reviews or any other content here in A Gardener's Notebook, please, I'd love to hear what's going on in your garden. I'd love to hear what you think about the podcast. You can send anything directly to agn@weltrite.com, or you can post them as comments on the website. Every single post on the website has a little comments button down at the bottom. You can click on that and let me know what you're thinking. I replied to Mr. Eglin and asked him if he might have the time to do a quick phone interview for us here at A Gardener's Notebook, and as soon as I can get that in the can, I'll bring it to you. If you check out the website, you'll notice a list of four or five books that I've been reading recently or are sitting here on my desk waiting to be read. Check them out. There are links to Amazon, and I'll be sure to post a review when I finish them. Storytelling is an important part of life. Everything we have around us, everything we collect, everything we bring back from our vacations, every plant we take cuttings of and bring back to our garden, I think their most important aspect is they act as triggers for the stories in our life. We can sit around with friends and family and look at the picture on the mantelpiece, look at the book, look at the shells from the Hawaiian seashore, look at the lei hanging from the closet knob, and it triggers our stories of those times. Our gardens are much the same. We can look around and remember when the kids were small, that's where they were playing with their trucks and dug up whatever they happened to find that day. In some cases, that corner of the garden might be where we buried a loving pet. Or in our case, according to the stories we've heard about our previous owners of the house here, where the ashes of one of the previous owners were actually scattered in the place he loved the most and worked so hard to make so beautiful. Sometimes we look out on our gardens and all we see is the work that needs to be done. I know, I'm very much that way. I see the hose that needs to be mended, the weeds that need to be pulled, the watering that needs to be done, the one bed that doesn't seem to be doing much of anything. But we need to remember, and we need to share our remembrances with those around us. Our annual summer party is coming up in about a month. We usually have it earlier in the summer, but because of our Hawaiian vacation, we've pushed it back, and we always try to pick a date where the largest number of our friends can come. This is often a group of 100 people who might come through during the course of the day. It's an open house. You can come and go as you please. So some people come early to go to other projects in the evening. Some people come late because they've been to another party. And others, our really close friends, will often come and stay the whole day with us, sitting out in the garden, sitting under our new pergola, playing music. A lot of my friends play guitar, percussion. I play harmonica and guitar. Some people, almost anyone, can play spoons. And we sit around all day and do something that's not done very much anymore, which is make music. Music's become a very passive entertainment over the last 100 years or so, where everyone used to be able to play the piano or the ukulele or the guitar or something. Now we're content to put on our iPod or bring up our iTunes and simply listen to the music made by others. When we're sitting around with our friends here in the garden, though, the discussion always turns to stories. We talk over the near past, the far past, which seems to be coming farther and farther away every time we get together. When we first started having this party, it was basically a gathering of young marrieds, single people, good friends. Now those same people arrive with 1, 2, 3 children in tow. My son is now 8 years old. I remember watching him totter about the garden, worrying whether he'd fall face first into a rose bush. We don't have the most kid-friendly garden, but I always figured with him that it was simply a way of learning about life. You had to watch out where you went, and we would watch him too, but he seemed to enjoy the garden even from a very early age. So the next time you're sitting outside, morning, noon, night, with your friends, by yourself, look around your garden and think about the stories it reminds you of. Think about the camellia bush that came from Aunt Sadie's yard, who's now long past. Or like my friend and best man at my wedding and great friend since college, who, when they recently moved to California, joining us after all these years, took great care and pains to pack up a rose from his grandmother's house, I believe, might have been his mother's house. Packed it up very carefully, even though they had a Hertz Penske truck stuffed to the gills with everything else they owned. This rose had a place of prominence, and every care was taken to make sure that it arrived safely here in California, was placed in a prominent place in their new yard here, so that every time he stepped out his front door, he'd be reminded of those stories. What stories does your garden tell? What does it remind you of? Have you ever thought of writing down those stories to share with your children, your relatives, your friends? Think about it. Volunteers, volunteers, volunteers everywhere. If only they were as useful as the volunteers at the local museum. Instead, of course, I'm talking about plants that arise anywhere but where we really want them. I have several troublesome volunteers every year here in the garden. One of the most prolific and one of the most difficult to deal with are our native fan palms. Washingtonia foliferi, I believe, if I remember correctly. These same palms were used by the Native Americans here, the Chumash, the Gabrielino, and others, to fashion sandals, homes, and a wide variety of other useful items. Their seeds are easily spread by birds, the seeds themselves being indigestible, so beneath nearly every power pole, every large tree, every tall fence, you see volunteers. In the back corner of my plot, I have to go in and hack them out with a chainsaw every so often. They become so thick. Of course, if I did it more frequently, they wouldn't get so large, but one can't do everything in the garden, can one? Our two ash trees also like to volunteer quite easily in the garden. I often see them pop up. They're a little easier to get rid of, just a quick snip and they're done. I guess I could wish really hard that a rose would suddenly volunteer in my garden, or a lovely shrub rose would cover up the decrepit shed in the backyard, or something like that. But, of course, volunteers are always the most hardy and the most plentiful plants in your area. That, of course, makes them unwanted in most cases, even though they all have a kind of beauty and a place in the world themselves. But I need to get out my loppers and wade out into the garden and try to bring the volunteers under control before I end up with a garden full of nothing but them. Well, looking here in the notebook, and yes, there really is a gardener's notebook. You have to trust me on this. I've actually put a scan of a page up on the blog. But there is a little notebook that I'm carrying around with me. In fact, just recently, I needed a new book, so I actually went out and splurged. I got an actual Moleskine, or Moleskine, some people will call them, notebook, like the famous artist used to use. Whenever I'm struck with a gardening idea out in the garden, or whenever I'm driving around, going from consulting call to consulting call, helping people with their computers, I do try to jot it down. And that's actually what I work from here when I do the podcast each time. I note in there that I have several videos marked that I want to do. I have one coming up on the repair of our drip system, which I want to document for you. There's also some cleanup in the driveway. Now that the rains are gone, all the spurge and other things which spring up there each spring have now died back, so it's time to do a little hoeing and a little cleanup there. Also, I wanted to show you how I've been tying the vines up on my new pergola and on the old trellis in the back. They're both filling out nicely, amazingly so. It always amazes me how fast vines will grow sometimes, but it's been a great pleasure, and it'll actually be quite nice even in just a month when we're having our party. So stay subscribed to A Gardener's Notebook. You'll receive each new show automatically each time I release one. You'll find a link for subscribing on the website. Look for the standard RSS icon. That's the little orange square that's filled with what look like, to me at least, emanating radio waves. It's up near the right-hand corner, and also below each post. As I mentioned before, I'd love to hear what's going on in your garden. You can send comments directly via email to agn@welchwright.com, or you can post them as comments on the website. Underneath each post, there's a little comments button you can click on. You can also join us in the Gardener's Notebook mailing list, which I recently restarted. That's a place that we can have ongoing discussions, or also a place for me to post announcements about the website and the podcast. And finally, we have a Flickr photo sharing group for A Gardener's Notebook you can join. You'll find links for that on the website as well. If you're a fellow podcaster or podcast listener and you're going to be at the Podcast Expo the last week of September here in Ontario, California, please look me up. Let me know where you'll be staying. And if you'd like to get together and have a quick chat about gardening and podcasting and life in general, until next time on A Gardener's Notebook, keep digging, keep telling stories, and be well. Oh, no, they know. Flowers on the side, and I will get you some. The side of the road, that river just flows. I can never run. Your love is the one. Now every woman got a spot.